It extends over the, obviously, the commercial media, but the whole range of systems that reach the public, the entertainment industry, television, legitimate what appears in schools, a lot of what appears straight out in newspapers and so on. A huge amount of that comes straight out of the public relations industry, which was established in this country early in the century, sort of developed in the 20s and on, and has become an enormous industry. It's now spreading to the rest of the world, but it's primarily here. And its goal from the beginning, perfectly openly and consciously, was to control the public mind, as they put it. And the reason was that the public mind was seen as the greatest threat to corporations. That's from early in the century. Business power was strong, but it's a very free country by comparative standards, and it's hard to call on state violence, not impossible, but hard to call upon state violence to press people's efforts to achieve freedom and rights and justice. So therefore it was recognized early on that it's going to be necessary to control the public mind. I should say that's not a new insight. Already recognized, in fact, back to the early stirrings of democratic revolutions in England in the 17th century, and there already was concern that we're not going to be able to control people by force. We are going to have to control them by the means, controlling what they think, what they feel, their attitudes toward one another. All sorts of mechanisms of control are going to have to be devised, which will replace the efficient use of force and violence that was available to a much greater extent earlier on, as has been, unfortunately, declining, uniformly, but often declining through the years, leading to the need for other methods of control. You don't have to move very far from the Cambridge elite to learn about it. The leading figure of the public relations industry is a highly regarded Cambridge liberal, Roosevelt Kennedy liberal, died recently, Edward Bernays, who wrote the standard manual of the public relations industry back in the 1920s, which is very much worth reading. Remember, I'm not talking about the right wing here. This is way at the left liberal end of American politics. His book, it's called On Propaganda, or maybe just Propaganda. I should mention that terminology changed during the Second World War. Prior to the Second World War, the term propaganda was used quite openly and freely for controlling the public mind. It got bad connotations during the Second World War because of, you know, Hitler and that sort of thing. So the term was dropped, and now there's other terms used. But if you read the literature in the social sciences and public relations industry and so on back in the, say, 20s and 30s, they describe what they're doing as propaganda.
by the 1930s, the U.S. was sort of brought into the more or less the mainstream of industrial society on these matters to a limited extent, in fact, but to some extent. That caused hysteria among the masters. Read the business press by 1936 or 37. Again, these are things which in a really free society, everybody would study in elementary school, because they're really important. These kids were a real framework of the society. They were talking about the hazard facing industrialists and the rising political power of the masses and how we must do something to save ourselves or our way of life will be gone and how to do it. They started right away. By the late 30s, there was a big anti-labor campaign that had built up. With new techniques. There was still the use of force, but it was understood that that's not going to work the way it did. So there was a shift to more propaganda, community organizing. The main idea, it's called the Mohawk Valley Formula, I guess, something like that. Yeah, Mohawk Valley Formula was designed by a lot of public relations hotshots around 36, 37, at the time of some of the steel strike, have a new, what they call scientific methods of strike breaking. We don't just come in, with clubs and shoot people and smash their heads and that sort of thing. We do it the scientific way, the old way of working. And the scientific methods of strike breaking were, in fact, drawn from the public relations ideas of the kind that I talked about. The main idea was to mobilize the community against the strikers and the union actors to present a picture which is by now so standard you can hardly turn on a tube without seeing it because it's just poured out in streams ever since then. Basic idea is to present a picture of the world that looks kind of like this. There's us, kind of like a big happy family in the community. The honest workman going off every morning with his lunchbox, his loyal wife who's making the meals, taking care of the kids, the hardworking executive who's toiling day and night in the interests of his workers in the community, the friendly banker who's that's us, and we're all in harmony. Harmony is a big word. We're in harmony, we're all together, it's Americanism. You might take a look at that word Americanism. It's an unusual term. It's the kind of term that you only find in totalitarian societies. So like in the Soviet Union, anti-Sovietism was considered the gravest of all crimes. And the Brazilian generals had some concept like that, anti-Brazilian. But try, say, posing a book on anti-Italianism and see what happens in the streets of Rome and Milan. People won't even bother laughing. It's a ludicrous idea. The idea of Italianism or, Norwayism or something like that, or at least it's just the object of ridicule in societies that have some kind of residue of a democratic culture inside people's heads. But in totalitarian societies, it is used, and as far as I know, the United States is the only free society that has such a If it is, you might try it. But anyhow, Americanism is an anti-Americanism and un-Americanism and so on. These are concepts which go along with harmony and getting rid of those outsiders. Another part is simply hatred here among people. So it's a diverse society. So you go to Europe, most places are pretty uniform. This is a diverse society. So it's easy. For propaganda, it's pretty wonderful that you've got the guy next door, so one thing or another. And huge campaigns go on to instigate divisions among people. I don't have to tell you that it's also familiar. But these are very natural techniques of social control. Now, if you can't control people by force, you have to control their minds, you have to control their attitudes. Exactly like they say. Not just third world countries, but I came back to Italy. Okay, you may not know this, but Italy was the target of the major CIA activity since its origin. The internal record runs dry around the mid-70s. Can't say after that. But from the origin of CIA in 1947 up to at least the mid-70s, Italy seems to have been targeted more than any other country. In an effort to undermine Italian democracy, Italy was regarded as sort of a third world country. It had a very strong vision. And when the American army, the American British army, what they did was called liberating Italy in 1943, 1942, they were appalled to discover that northern Italy had been liberated by the resistance, which had established a functioning society with very strong labor control. The resistance was mostly labor in the peasant base. They held off the Germans, liberated most of the place. They had instituted labor worker management in factories. They had thrown out what were called American and British. They were protected workers, what they called, I'm now speaking for terminology, U.S. British doctrine. They were keeping useless workers and throwing out, arbitrarily dismissing owners and bosses. And that's, of course, intolerable. And the system was functioning. That's something where they were focusing on unemployment, which was recognized was Italy's major problem. That's their problem, not our problem. Our problem is to restore the traditional structure, which meant traditional hierarchies, actually, not restoring factory structure, and factory collaboration, and so on. And a big effort was made to do that. It was not entirely successful in 1948, the first election took place. It looked as if labor-based forces would probably win. And a huge effort went into trying to ensure that would happen by withholding food, starving, by restoring the police to effect control, by all sorts of threats and manipulation. Very big operation. And the first major CIA operation, among others. And they took it really seriously. Again, something you would learn in a free society is this thing called the National Security Council, which made the planning outfit, which publishes, it doesn't publish, but it produces documents, top-level planning documents, which are among, not the only important ones, but among the most important ones. They tend to get released maybe 35 years later, if you can look back at them. So we have them now from the late 40s. And the first one, NSC 1, 1947, is devoted to Italy. And it calls for, it says, you know, we're going to try all these measures to ensure that Italy doesn't have a free democratic government, which would have, they don't say it, but amount, but which, in which there'd be a big role for the organized working class in Italy. But, and they say, but if this doesn't work, if the communists, as they call it, in fact, a lot of work on this, but if the communists come to power through a legal vote, through a legal election, then the United States is going to declare a national emergency and is going to support military activities inside Italy to overthrow the democratically elected government. That's how seriously they took it back in 1947. They also knew exactly why the communists were powerful. And you read it directly in the census. So they were honest, they were supporting working class interests. It's true that they were collaborationists. They weren't trying to separate Italy from the Western Alliance or anything, but they were defending working class interests. People supported them. And that's a working class party. There were plenty of others besides communists. But they had to be prevented either by coercion, like, say, withholding food and violence, or if that didn't work, by direct intervention, military intervention. It was taken very seriously, and in fact, it was taken pretty present.
I'm not afraid of the dark. stripper's dead. I'm alone.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Start it!
Microscopes to metal antidotes, two telescopes that magnifies eyes of a roach. Decomputed the cup of coffee planet with my hand and astral planet detached, turn on rare bargains. Cut the light on the kid and turn it bright on. Supersonic waves combine and burn his brain waves. I see the mascot of evil, he's not Knievel. Shakespeare's gone, don't even think about him. Yes, as I go into the park, I see blue flowers. Blue flowers. It's totally raining green and pouring. Blue flowers. I smell the bees and the birds. Blue flowers. Different aspects of life. Blue flowers. I can prepare with the white suit and stethoscope. Listen to your heartbeat. Delete, beep, beep, beep. You're
insurance is high, but my price is cheap.
Thank you. Ah!